Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to m2m365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode. Today I'm joined by Nick North, who is a dude, a husband, a dad to five kids, and a branding strategist. He also has a history of living as a woman, a wife, a mum, a photographer, and even an E&R. When he embraced his identity and came out as transgender, he realized just how much gender affects the way we think, talk, sell, and function. He now speaks from his experience on both sides of the gender coin, empowering men and women to live authentically and powerfully, while also making more money, following their passion and their gut. You can find him at nicknorth.co, but I'll pop all the links in afterwards, and you definitely want to go follow him on Instagram at epicdanger. Hey, Nick.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for coming and having this conversation with me. I'm really excited about this one because it's going to make me really uncomfortable.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. I'm super jazzed to be here.
First up, what does adulting mean for you? Or what does being a kick-ass and kind adult mean for you?
Yeah, it's going to sound like not very fun. But I think for me, I think it's about responsibility. And I was that person that I was probably like an adult around 13. Mm-hmm. When I bought my first vacuum. So, right. But it's, I know, I really like vacuums actually. It's like, I have three. It's fine. That's weird. It's fine. But
it tells us a lot about you, really. I mean,
yeah, it does. I like to, yeah, suck things up and keep things orderly. But it's just about like, what are you responsible for? Are you responsible for yourself? Are you responsible for your actions? Are you taking responsibility for every part of your life? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, I look at, you know, raising my kids and the goal is like when they're little, I'm responsible for everything. And then there's this like shift in the spectrum where they become more responsible and we become less responsible and like less responsible for their happiness, less responsible for their big feelings and little feelings and their like physical needs, less responsible for their emotional needs, less responsible for all sorts of things.
And also responsible for, as a good parent, in my opinion, responsible for getting them to a place where they can manage that for themselves and they feel able or capable of doing so.
Yeah. And you let them fail early so they can like fail on things that are like in middle school instead of waiting until they're 23 and then they're like, you're like, go be an adult now. And then they're screwed. But I really think it comes down to like, what are we responsible for? Are we responsible? Like we're responsible for our own happiness as an adult. We're responsible for our own sadness. We're responsible for the situations we're stuck in, even if some of them are out of our control. Mm-hmm. We're responsible for how we react to those situations.
And does that get to be fun? Is responsible like just a dirty, serious, negative word?
I mean, not if you think about it, because it's like you're also responsible for your happiness and your joy.
Well, and also you get to like use the vacuum, clean stuff up and make it orderly, right?
Whatever you want to, you know? And you get, you're responsible for like your good choices and your bad choices. And it can be fun, I think. Mm. I think that if you're a kind of person who likes autonomy, it's really fun. I enjoy being an adult. I hated being a kid.
Okay, so let's take this into the context of the work that you do and the life that you've had. Mm-hmm. When do you think you became an adult? Like you said at 13, but were you being responsible for your entire identity at 13?
I was responsible for, I was responsible for it. I was probably responsible for my identity at 7.
Okay.
Because it was that thing where I was like, I know who I am. I was assigned female at birth, but that's not who I am. Mm. been telling that truth for a really long time, like since I was a little kid. And then there was a certain point, probably around 7 or 8, where I realized, like, this is not going to happen for me. I have to fit in. I have to play the part. And I became responsible in my own little 7, 8-year-old head for being a normal person, air quotes.
And how much was that about being responsible for the caregivers and in your life and their feelings? Or yeah, was it bigger than that? I mean, how were they around it?
Yeah, it was all of it. I grew up really poor. My parents got divorced early, which that's not a big deal. But I was raised mostly by my mom and my grandma. My mom made poor choices. And it just, you know, it just is what it is. I don't have a relationship with her. I wasn't one of those people who like was beaten for wearing the wrong clothes or things like that, or called a bunch of names. It was just that like there were so many other things going on survival wise that like this was not the hill to die on, and it just didn't seem like an option at the time. Like that many, I'm 35, so that many years ago, I didn't know that being transgender was a thing. I thought I was the only person in the world who was broken like this. Broken in air quotes again. But like at the time, I thought I was truly broken. It was this deep, dark secret that everyone would know. And I had to like push it down, lock it down, to the point where I think that honestly, I just convinced myself that I was a girl. You know, I was like, I can do this. Here I am. I wear nail polish. I got married at 19. Yeah. I had my first kid at 23, my second at 24, my third at 28, and my fourth at 29 and 30.
Wow.
Right? And so I just kept being like, I'll just do the next thing that shows that I'm like a good woman. Mm-hmm. Like I got married, I bought a house, I had kids, I stayed home with them, I was a fucking great mom. I did all the right things. I like then started a business from home to find myself again and get my identity back. Like I did all the things.
At what point did you recognize that there were other options? Like, yeah, when did that happen?
I thought like, oh, I'm just gay. That's the issue. That's okay. Like what's happening. But I was like, I'm married. I'm in this situation. Here I am. I'm in it. So, you know, I got 5, 6 more years, get all my kids in school, then I'll explore those things. And then I fell in love with my wife and I was like, oh, I can't wait that long. That's unfortunate. Now I have to leave my husband for my wife. So, and that was that's when like I finished my adulting, I think, was I finished my stepping into being an adult. Was that time period, and it was probably about a 2-year period where I realized I was gay. No, I'm not. I'm a man. That's a whole thing. Figuring all of that, unpacking all of that, and then choosing that, like, I have to do what is best for me. I'm an Enneagram 2. I'm a helper with a 3 wing, so I am a helper with an achiever wing, which means I have to be the best helper. And my Gretchen Rubin 4 tendency type is an obliger. So basically I do everything to get validation and like whatnot from others. And I had to realize like, oh, I'm putting myself in a lot of trouble this way. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to take, like, that's still who I am, but it taught me to have boundaries around it. And it also taught me to, that like it's okay that that's how I feel good about myself, but I also know that I really hate being taken advantage of, and I wasn't articulating where my lines were, and so I was like being pushed into that taking advantage of all the time. Mm-hmm. Then I was an exploding doormat and an asshole, and
actually I love that you brought that up, because I think it's really important for us to normalize that, right? Like there are so many really good misfits. Like you literally described my misfit avatar, client avatar, right? Like who are over, like obliging and like just really good, really kind people. and have a tendency to explode out the sides because they aren't great at communicating their boundaries to other people, which means they get squished and then explode, right?
Yeah, and then we don't take responsibility for the fact that actually we did that to ourselves because they didn't know that was where our boundary was. We literally didn't tell them. We told them over and over again, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine.
Well, and sometimes that's because you didn't know either, right? And so like learning your own boundaries, going through this, like, well, some of the things that I love about yours and Catherine's social media and the documentary, everybody has to absolutely go watch that. It's great. But also there's one thing that you shared the other day, which I've been sharing with absolutely everyone, which is the numbers tool for how much, tell me, you use it, do it in your words, because I will get it, I'll bastardize it in some way.
Yeah, so basically it is, we realized that we were compromising all the time and no one was getting what they wanted. Then we also realized that we were fighting all the time, but it was like about shit that we didn't actually care about. It was like we were fighting about where the salt and pepper went. And it was like, oh, we were both used to always being in charge because we were both single parents. And when we weren't, when I wasn't a single parent, I was very much the primary parent. My husband worked 60 hours a week. And like that, I made all the decisions at home. And so it was very much like we were just both used to being in charge. So we would fight about stupid things. So what we do is now we just, when we start to feel conflict, we go, oh, what number is this for you? And the number is based on like, zero is like, I couldn't give a shit at all. I have no opinion. I don't care. You could do anything in this situation and I wouldn't give a damn. And 10 is I'm ready to get a divorce over this. So now when we're in conflict, even when it just begins, we go, oh, what number is this? And I'll say it's a 5 and she'll say it's a 7. Like, okay, you do you. Or 5 or 7, we might actually do a little bit of a compromise. Like, here's why it matters to me. And she'll be like, oh, I can totally honor that while still doing all of this. Mm-hmm. If it's like a 2 or a 1 and like a 4 and a 5, the person that's higher gets it. If it's, we're both at an 8, we book therapy for it. It's like you put a pin in it and like, this is a sticking spot. And if we try to compromise, we'll both be unhappy. And we need to figure out more like what the root of it is, what the things are. And so you just walk around talking in numbers all the time.
Well, no, you don't, right? Like, it's what I really love, and I watched bits of it. We were just talking earlier about how you document your whole life now and everyone loves it, but like, exaggerating. But I love that you found tools to adult. Because there is this notion still in society, I believe, that you get happy ever after. Like, people come to me and they're like, I want to find my relationship. Great. What do you think is going to happen after that? Well, I haven't really thought beyond that, because then I'm going to be in happy ever after land. I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that. We need tools to stay in relationship and to continue to choose each other every single day.
I'm one of those people that fully believes in soulmates. I believe that we are like, we've all lived many lives, and Catherine and I have lived a ton of them together and we'll live a ton more. And I feel like being with your soulmate actually is the person that is set up to stretch you to be your biggest, boldest, bravest self. And so if you're actually with your soulmate, it's a fuck ton of work. If you actually want a good, wonderful, functioning marriage, it is way more work. It is way more work to be married to my wife now than it was to be married to my husband, who was not the right person for me, and yet a really delightful, wonderful person and still a friend, you know?
I'm really curious. I feel like we could do a whole podcast on that, but I'm really curious how you managed that. How are you still friends? How did you navigate this whole process and end up in a place where you're all friends?
Honestly, I took responsibility for the fact that I was the one leaving. I was the one choosing to walk away. That like we had had when I said I was leaving, he was like, well, we had a deal. We had a contract here. Like, what up? And it's because we both weren't living our truth at the time. He's come out since then too, and he's happily a gay guy and super great. But I took responsibility for it, and I chose to let things go that I knew mattered to him that didn't really, if I, like I, I gave him the house. So it was that thing where, like, I knew that it mattered that he could stay living the same quality of life that he had stability, that he had the same place for our kids to come to his house to. And I could have been like, you need to buy me out of my half. I want my 70 grand or whatever. But I was like, oh, over 50 years of raising my kids with this man, if this is the thing that will make him feel like I didn't screw him over, I'll pay $2,000 a year for that, you know? And so I feel really good about making that decision. I don't have regret in it. There's nothing that I would, like, I wouldn't take it back, because it helped us really quickly, him know that I wasn't trying to screw him over. That I wasn't.
That's so important, right? I mean, in intention and adult, like, for me, adulting is like letting someone know your intentions and also that you hear them, that you understand them. And if you don't, like, trying to find a way to understand what motivates the other person and what they need in order to feel met and seen.
Yeah. And it probably isn't the right move for most people. You know, at the time I was identifying as a woman. And so my lawyer was like, this is not the right thing for you to do. I had this deep knowing in my soul that, like, it was the right thing for me to do. Mm. So I wouldn't suggest that to most people. I knew that I could provide for myself. And, like, I wouldn't suggest that for most people. But for me, it was the right thing.
Trying to find a way to segue into some of the other stuff, because I'm just aware of the time, and like, we're trying to do so many things in such a short amount of time.
You're like, let's pivot.
Okay, so in order to do that, I guess one of the things I'm curious about, mm-hmm. and you may not have the answer for this, and it may just be impossible to sum up in a really small amount, but what are the key things that you notice or have observed are the main differences of being in relationship as a woman versus being in relationship as a man?
Okay, so there's so many.
I didn't think it was a small question.
It's a big one, yeah. I think the biggest, it's slightly hard for me to tell you in real truthfulness, because my wife functions more like a man than she does like a woman.
Okay.
She is very feminine. She is very like, I am a woman, hear me roar, goddess. She calls herself bitch goddess, actually, so get on that. But she communicates like a man. She doesn't notice when I get my hair cut. She, very like, I have to tell her all the time, like, you have to say hi to people and ask how they're doing in an email first before you give them your ask. Like, this is how, we call it human games. She doesn't do any of those things. She, like, does them because she's learned them, not because they're innate to her. And so in many ways, I'm still married to a dude. I'm the romantic one. But the way that she is a woman, and the fact that she understands carrying the emotional load and the mental load for things, she understands that, like, getting ready for a vacation isn't just we get in the car and go and someone's packed everything and been like, well, that was easy. Like, there's this thing that happens that, like, women are raised and socialized and taught to carry the emotional and mental load for all the people around them. Mm-hmm. And men are taught that, what's that? So in that sense, it makes everything different.
It leads into a kind of my supposition, I suppose, about where the world is, because I feel like it's changing. I really feel like the world is just far less binary than it ever has been. And I think it will continue to go that way.
And I think most of that is just access to information, right? Like, Laverne Cox being on Orange is the New Black, seeing her character, seeing her twin brother play her, like, her playing guy self, you know, like, seeing the struggle that she goes through, I think that opened a ton of people's minds and hearts. And I think that it opened a ton of opportunity for people like me to see themselves reflected back. I literally didn't know that, like, that term of being transgender until Laverne Cox was on Orange is the New Black. And I'm like, that's embarrassing, but I grew up in a, you know, shitty town with that didn't have a lot of access to a lot of stuff, and my circle was not big and vast. Like, I was listening to one of your episodes and you were like, oh yeah, I was lucky, my parents and I, we talked a lot about things like that growing up, and you were talking about being like spiritual bypass, and I was like, I learned that term like last year. Your parents were talking to you about it growing up. What fucking house were you living in? And tell me all about it. Like, you know?
Yeah. And it's also, it's really interesting being on the other. Okay. So I've just come off recording a podcast that will either come out before or after this with Sean, who is the founder of the Asian Female Entrepreneur Collective. And I was talking with her very briefly about wanting to make sure that my podcasts are inclusive and that all voices get heard. And that about a year ago, somebody told me that I was homophobic and racist in a very public post on Facebook.
That's not fun.
It's not fun, but it's also really interesting when I was brought up the way that I was brought up, where it's so alien to me that I might be, right? Like, it makes me emotional, even now, to just that either of those things exist in the world, right? Yeah. And so I really checked myself, and over the last couple of years, I've been really like aware of my whiteness, of my privilege, of my like privileges I didn't even know I had, right? About like knowing who I am, knowing what I like all sorts of things. I just had no idea that I, had privilege around. And I think it's really important for us to have those conversations, and I really want to use my privilege in that way. And it's uncomfortable to do so because it's really uncomfortable because I might look stupid. I might look unkind. I might like all sorts of things.
Yeah. And when we're trying to be better, we also are all panicked that like everyone's going to think we're trying to be white saviors, and we're like trying to tokenize people by having people of color as our friends. But how are we supposed to learn about experiences? And like, it's a tricky thing. It's like, as a trans person, I don't want to be everyone's token trans friend. But at the same time, I recognize that me being visible and me being like, hey, I'm trans, let me talk to you about it, allows access to a whole bunch of people. And I'm not saying that it is anyone else's job to educate folks. I'm choosing that I want to make it my job. I'm choosing to step into that. But it's tricky, you know? I realized the other day, I posted on Facebook the other day that I was like, oh, someone asked me for a recommendation on graphic designers, and all of the people I suggested to them were white women. And I was like, oh, I bet you that there are some people of color who also do design. I just don't know them. They're not in my circle. And honestly, it's because my circle that I sort of like came out of in this world, in the entrepreneur world, is the photography world. And most photographers, like the demographic of photographers right now, is actually higher on like, it's like women 25 to 40. That's like the highest demographic of photographers right now, because stay-at-home moms all of a sudden had access to these cameras and creativity and outlets and finding themselves again. And it's become this amazing thing for a ton of people. But it's white people who have privilege to go and buy a camera that they can buy.
Yeah. And then
$1,000 to spend.
And then we can like seek out, this is what we were talking about before. And like, we can seek out, to make connection, but we don't want to then be like, hey, you're my token friend, can I ask you these questions? And so it is a minefield. And for me, like, my job as an adult and also as my calling, if you like, to be someone who is, I'm starting to use the term priestess of alchemy, because it's my job to alchemize people's shit into gold. And that means we have to talk about it. We have to allow the light to land on it so that it can transmute into something else.
Right? Like, if we look at the amount of like sexual assault and sexual abuse that happens in the world, and then look at how much we actually talk about sex, I think there's a direct correlation there, you know?
Absolutely. Like, if you make something taboo, if you make it, like, if you stop people from, I mean, like, one of the things I'm jealous of about your life is that you get to do all the topless selfies, right?
So many topless selfies. I'm like, get it. I'm all over it. We're like really sex positive. We start talking to our kids about consent at like very, like, you know, our 10-year-old would pick up our 1-year-old and the 1-year-old wouldn't want them to. We were like, hey, actually, you can you see that they don't want that? You have to listen to their body. Their body is their rules, you know? We tell our kids every day when they go off to school, be kind and brave, and remember that no means no and your body is your own, you know? Those are our mantra. And
I love that so much.
Yeah, you just have to start. It's like when you bring the things into the light and you talk about them, you can heal them.
Okay, so we've had, quantify this. I have asked your permission to have this conversation, that we're going to dive into something that's a little bit uncomfortable for me, and we're going to do it anyway. So when I was talking to my friend about having this conversation with you, I was like, there's so many things I want to talk to Nick about, and we've got like half an hour. What should I focus on? What should I include? And she said, what are you most scared to talk about? And I said, great question, by the way. And I said, well, when I was dating, online dating about 5 years ago, I was having conversations with lots of men, and one of them made me feel uncomfortable, but there was something about them that was uneasy for me. Like, I couldn't put my finger on it. There was something about them that was like, you're not like everybody else, and I can't put my finger on it. And it made me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of learned that they were trans, and I didn't know, it made me feel really uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do with it. And I ghosted them. I was supposed to go out on a date. I canceled the date. I canceled the date and then stopped speaking to them. And felt really bad afterwards, because I wished that I had the emotional maturity to do better, but I didn't. And I then, about 6 months later, was on a really busy train and I bumped into them. And it was so awkward. And I felt like karma had come to bite me in the bum. And I just, again, I like didn't know what to say. And I don't think they recognized me, or maybe they did. We both sort of looked at each other and didn't have the conversation and didn't say anything. And I wanted to bring this, not to like just out myself, but I can't be the only person in the world who's been in this situation.
Yeah, I don't think you are. I think it's really human. I think it's really like typical. And I think if we look at where the world was 5 years ago, it was just, I think that now most people would not ghost someone. I think that but 5 years ago, most people would have, because they don't know what that means. What does that mean? What does that mean for me? What does that mean for you? How do I deal with that? And it's, are the human, the normal human response is when something is too hard for our brains literally, their job is like their primitive job, their primal job is to keep us safe and to conserve energy. And so when something is too hard for us to think about, literally our brains take us somewhere else. Like, that's their job. I talk to people about this all the time when they're writing website copy, because if there's too much on a website, if you can't tell what to do right away, your brain literally makes you go away. It's like, nope, I'm not reading this. I'll start daydreaming and thinking about something else. And that is, it's like the exact same thing has just happened. It is unfortunate because it happened with someone like a human rather than a website. But I mean, you're talking about it now, you're doing better now.
For me, actually, like, since once I've kind of really digested it, I was like, it was a wonderful experience for me. I mean, not that it's all about me, but it's my journey. Because I'd been ghosted by men so frequently, and it was the first time I'd ever done it the other way around, and it gave me an insight into what might be going on for some of the guys. So I just blanket hated every single guy that had ever ghosted me without really understanding what might be going on for them. And now I kind of get it. It's like, oh, I just like for whatever reason, I did something to them that gave them a similar experience where they were like, I don't know what to do with this.
So I'm done. Yeah. And it could be that, like, oh, this woman is too, like, she knows herself too much for me. And that's scary because I don't know myself that much. I'm not ready to, like, I can see lots of reasons why someone would look at you and be like, ooh, I'm not ready for this. Because, not because you're not awesome, but because you are awesome. And so I think that's for people.
Yeah. I actually had one guy get back in touch with me like 6 months. I didn't even remember him, right? Like, I just didn't even remember our exchange at all. And about 6 months later, he got in touch with me on Instagram and he said, I want to apologize to you. I was really mean. I was like, who are you? I'm so sorry. Like, I really don't remember you at all. And he said, we chatted on this one app. We had about this many conversations and then I just ghosted you. And I ghosted you because you seemed really cool and I realized you were the kind of woman I actually wanted in my life, but there's just no way if I showed you the real me, you would be into me at this point. I was like, wow. Like,
that's some self-actualization.
Yeah, but also, like, again, I'm like, this is so human. Like, I feel this way so often when I see guys that I determine are too attractive for me, right? So I'm like, oh, you're too attractive to me. And so I talk to them, and if they're intelligent as well, then I'm out of there because I want you, so I'm gonna leave. The human brain is ridiculous.
I mean, we do that with not just with love interests, we do that with people that we want to be friends with. We do that with people that we do that with ourselves, like our own imposter syndrome all the time. Like, oh, I'm not gonna apply to speak at that conference because they would never. I'm not gonna pitch myself on that podcast. I'm not gonna submit my book to that publisher. I'm not gonna do, because, like, that's above me. That's way out of my league. You know, that's a really human response all over the place. One thing that I want to touch back on really quickly with the trans guy is the fact that you said that there was something that made you uneasy. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is really an insightful thing for you and for, like, other people, that, like, just because something makes you uneasy, it doesn't mean that it's bad. Everyone thinks, like, oh, they're hiding something. It must be terrible. But sometimes it's just like the world is not safe enough for us to show our true selves to everyone. And I think that it's a lesson for everyone listening and, like, for ourselves, that, like, actually when we show up inauthentically, it's more off-putting. It's like, I have a way easier time connecting with people now that I'm out, because people always would be like, oh, there was just something, like, a little off. Like, you were just, like, hiding something. And it's because I wasn't being my true self. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's empathic, anyone who, like, really feels the energy of people rather than, like, the words that are coming out of their mouth, there was, like, a disconnect there, you know? And I would imagine that you are that person. And so,
Thank you. Because actually, that's really, now I would behave entirely differently. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I would even still go on a date with that person, but I definitely show up fully and have a conversation to get sure or to get clear whether I was interested in them as a person. But my life has, and who I am, has evolved to a place where gender is no longer the most important thing that I am looking for, right? Like, it is important to me, but only as a fully authentic expression of who someone is and what is going to bring the kind of polarity that I am looking for in my relationships, rather than as a judgment.
Right. See?
Yeah.
We all get better and better. We all learn from things. And you know what? I bet you that he learned something from there too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think, like, at that point in my life, talking about being over responsible, like, I felt so responsible for everybody else's feelings all of the time. And I wasn't doing a particularly good job of being responsible for mine, right? Like, it was actually easier to be like, oh, I've been such a bitch to this man or to this person, rather than really even going into, like, what actually happened in my body. Like, can I find the language to say, there's something about you that's making me feel really uneasy, but there's also something about you that's really interesting and attractive. Like, can we have a conversation? I don't know that I'd say it like that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Good. We could talk forever, and I would love to, and maybe you'll come back and we'll talk about more things. But if people want to come find you, find out about brand strategy stuff, come watch the film, like, where's the best place to go?
The best place, honestly, the place where I'm the most active is on Instagram. That's my favorite place to function in the world, because I think it's the kindest platform. It's the platform where people don't go around hating each other. It's like they go in there wanting to be better, I feel like. I mean, there's always the whatever, but the jerks in the crowd. But I like Instagram, or you can hit me at nicknorth.co.
Awesome. I will put every single link we have in the show notes. Do you want to end on an I'm an adult, but with me?
Yeah. Go.
You're going to make me go first.
I can go first if you want.
I don't mind. Do you have one?
I have so many. I'm an adult, but I lose my keys and wallet at least once a week.
I don't.
Okay, I'm an adult, but I bite my nails, and then I put them either behind the couch or in the car. I like put them on the floor mat, and then my wife hates me for it.
Oh, let's not tell anyone I do that too.
Okay. You and me, it's a really great thing. And I've started putting them in my pants pockets. Like if I'm out in the world, I'm like, oh, that's embarrassing. And I put them in my pockets, and then I have to empty my pockets of fingernails. It's very gross.
It mostly happens when I'm driving. So it's mostly the floor of the car. You just reminded me, I'm about to give my car back. I should probably like check so that I don't embarrass myself.
Yeah.
I'm an adult, but this week is a weird one. It is around the car. I'm an adult, but I'm giving my car back. Before I move countries, and I haven't been carless for since my 20s, and I feel really, really uneasy about having no car.
You're really scared about it, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I'll get that. I am an adult, but there's so many. I definitely can go with the uneasiness of like public transit. I find it really, public transit is the most, I actually won't do it. I get lost. I'm scared. I can get lost in a mall.
But do you know what the coolest thing is? Like we met through a friend of mine, but we met on the internet. And what I love about good branding, good strategy, is that you meet people who are just like you all over the world.
That's true.
Right, we need to stop talking.
Okay.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am at Ebony Allard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.